The title of the message for today for our church is, Whom do you want? It's a question, isn't it? Whom do you want? Can I ask you, whom do you want for as your companion? Whom do you want for your life companion? Whoever? I don't think so, right? Is it going to be him, or is it going to be him, or is it going to be her, or is it going to be her? However, the question that we would like to ask this afternoon from the truth and from the Word of God is, whom do you want as your king of your life? And you would be thinking, is that a question we need to ask? And I say yes for two reasons. Number one, because you all have one. You already have one. Okay? We all have this king who rules and reigns and leads your life. You already have one. Okay? And the second reason, which I think it's a little bit more intriguing, is because by our nature, we don't want any other king. By our nature. You just don't want any king in your life. This week, we begin the Passion Week, and the word passion means suffering. That's a Christian word, people. This is the Passion Week, and the word means suffering, and we want to remember his passion. I don't think we should just kind of like brush it off. I think it'll be wonderful if you could just spend some time if you love him. And think about his passion. And what was that passion? What was that suffering for? You know, Jesus walked on earth and suffered. Here's the reason. Because he wanted you. He wanted you and I. And I asked this question, whom do you want? But he actually walked on earth and suffered for you and I, so that we may be his, because he wanted us. Today we'll be looking at the final part of Roman trial and third part of Roman trial, and that's when Pilate pronounced that he's not guilty. Now would you just imagine with me, we go to that Friday morning 2,000 years ago in front of the Praetorium. And you're among the crowd, thousands of crowd, okay, who will be calling, kill him, crucify him. Would you go there with me? Would you try? Okay. Pilate comes out and he said, he's not guilty, yet he's about to hand him over to the crowd, the mob by this time. They are hysterical. So Pilate tries to release Jesus by coming up with this Barnabas idea. We talked about that last week. I'm going to release you one person during this Passover for you. So is it going to be him or is it going to be him? Exactly the same question. Whom do you want? Okay, that's the question. Whom do you want? He was asking the crowd, whom do you want? Whom do you want? Seriously, honestly, whom do you want? Okay. We're in the 19th chapter, and Pilate, he tries his last resort, which is to punish Jesus, flogging Jesus, and hopefully the crowd will soften a little bit, and they'll be a little bit pampered, so that, okay, that's enough, release him. That was his last resort. Okay, that's what we're going to see. So I want us to go to the today's text, chapter 19, just a few verses. Verse 19, imagine the Praetorium, early Friday morning, you are the crowd. Okay? Then the Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. Do you know what that is? It doesn't sound very fun, right? I'm going to explain. It's a cruel Roman punishment, which I'll describe it to you. Okay? So Jesus was flogged, and the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns. Okay, if you could picture that. And put it on his head and array him in the purple robe. What are they doing? Basically, make him look like a king, some sort of king, because he is claimed to be king. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Whom do you want as your king? That's the picture. And they came up to him, these soldiers, to his face, if you could picture. Jesus is already flogged and has a crown of thorn on his head, which I'll describe in a moment. And he's wearing a purple robe, and they're kind of like making fun of him, mocking him. Hail, King of the Jews. Hail, King of the Jews. Hail, King of the Jews. It meant grammatically, repeatedly, to his face. And what else do they do? And they struck him with their hands. Have you ever been struck with someone slapped you? That's the most inhumane thing. In Jewish culture, striking someone's face with palm of your hand is so dehumanizing. If you have to do it, they would do it the other way, because it is so dehumanizing. But Jesus was dehumanized. Okay? Pilate went out again, out of the praetorium, and said to the crowd, "See, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I found no guilt in him." He's not guilty. Not guilty. So Jesus was brought out wearing the crown of thorns, purple robe, and Pilate, Jesus right here. Can you picture that? Speaking to them, "Behold a man. Ecce homo." That's a famous statement throughout history. Ecce homo. You think he's dangerous? Look at him. He's helpless. He can't even help himself. You think he could overthrow Rome? Look at him. Ecce homo. Right? When the chief priest and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him," and crucify him. Okay, that's the text that we're going to be talking about today. So Pilate took Jesus and flogged him after he pronounced that he is not guilty. What is that? What is that? You try to make sense out of that. He was just desperately trying to handle this volatile situation or the case where Jesus is not guilty. Yet, what do I do with him? You know, you're going to have to answer that question too. What are you going to do with Jesus? Right? Because the crowd has gone mad. These are the crowd who had become a mob, right? Angry mob. Bloodthirsty mob. That's what you are. Could you picture that? Let's get some imagination. Thousands of people, and they are angry, and they are thirsty for blood. They're a mob. Now, I want us to go to Matthew account. I told you that this story of Pilate, Pontius Pilate, is in all four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I want to go to the Matthew one because I want to see and try to assess what's going on here. Okay, so let's go to Matthew chapter 27, verse 17. We pick up from there. And here's the question. When they gathered, Pilate said to the crowd, pick up right from there, Friday morning, in front of the praetorium with the crowd, "Whom do you want?" There's the question. That's the historic question. "Whom do you want me to release for you? Barabbas or Jesus who called Christ?" For he knew, Pilate knew, that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. Besides, there's a leaks, little side story. His wife kind of warned him not to just punish him. Here's the story. Besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him. Little text, I guess. Little text. have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in my dream. Romans were very, very superstitious. And somehow, I guess Lord just kind of gave his wife a dream. And his wife kind of texted to him, don't touch him. Let him go. Let him go. See what's going on in this tense situation? Verse 20, now the chief priest and the elders persuaded the crowd. How do you do that? I don't know. I don't know how they did it. Persuading the crowd. Hey, kill him. Hey, kill him. Crucify him. I don't know. Persuading the crowd. Ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. That's why I picked Matthew version. Do you see that word? Destroy Jesus? That's pretty bad, isn't it? Destroy June. That's unthinkable. But how do you say destroy him? Pick him, but destroy him. Do you see the sense? Do you see the kind of like motivation? Do you see the kind of like intensity of the motivation? Destroy him. The governor again said to them, which of the two do you want? Asking again, whom do you want? Which of the two? This one or this one? Him or him? Right? Me to release for you. And they said, Barabbas. It is our decision is clear. Barabbas. Now it gets even more interesting. Do you see this Pilate is at a situation and he knows he's losing his grip. He's just sinking in right now. The mob is kind of taking over. You see that? And then, what does Pilate say? Pilate said to them, then, what shall I do with Jesus? You know, if you destroy Jesus in your life, you're going to have to deal with Jesus. What are you going to do with Jesus? It's a historic question. What do I do with Jesus? The real question, isn't it? If you diss him, if you just ignore him, you're going to have to deal with him one day. Okay? What do I do with Jesus, who is called Christ? And they all said, let him be crucified. And then Pilate tries one last time. Then he said, why? Do you see what he's doing? Why? What evil has he done? He's harmless. He's guiltless. Why? And then listen to this. But they shouted all the more, let him be crucified. Basically, they're saying, doesn't matter. Just get rid of him. Destroy him and kill him. Away with him. It sounds pretty bad, isn't it? Which of the two do you want? Barabbas or Jesus? Barabbas. And then Pilate asked this historic, tragic question, which I think you must ask as well. Then what do I do with Jesus? What do I do with Jesus? So then, what was the response? Again, they said, let him be crucified, destroy him. And now Pilate, by this time, is frantic. He's frantically asking again, why? He's harmless. He's not guilty. And they said, it doesn't matter, just crucify him. That's the story of Matthew 27. And I was preparing this week, and I was reminded of similar scene of crowd or the mob, which represents the humanity, by the way, just basically crying out to Pilate, crucify him. And I was totally reminded of similar story in the Old Testament. Okay? And where do we see that? There is that historic moment for the nation of Israel in 1 Samuel chapter 8. Israel was a special kind of country. It's a holy nation. God was the king. Literally, he was the king. It's not a democratic government, but it was a theocratic government. Democratic led by the people, theocratic led by God, Theo, So God was their king, and God was speaking and ruling the nation through his judges. And Samuel was the last judge. You know Samuel, right? And Samuel was getting old, and basically the elders of the nation. Now listen to this. See what happens with the leaders of the nation have gone mad. So they basically said, this is wrong. We don't want this way. We want a king just like all the other nations. So they came to Samuel and basically said, asked for a king. Now, appoint us for us a king to judge us like all the other nations. It sounds harmless almost, right? But when Samuel heard that, he did not like what he was hearing. You sense it. You sense the spirit. You sense what kind of spirit they're coming to him. And Samuel spoke to God, asked God and prayed to God. And this is God's response. L-O-R-D, the Lord, Yahweh's response. Especially after talking about a deity of God. Okay, this is self-existent, self-sufficient, independent, who has no beginning and no end. And everything else depends on him. Responds to this kind of request. This is what he said. Verse 7. Listen carefully. Okay. Obey the voice of the people. Wow, that's surprising. What is he saying? Basically saying, let them have it. And then he follows by saying, obey the voice of the people in all that they say to you. For they have not rejected you. This is Lord speaking to Samuel. But they have rejected me. Okay. Forsaking from the time I deliver from the Egypt. That's the beginning. That's the conception of the nation of Israel. From the beginning until now, they have been forsaking me. Okay. Serving other gods. So they are doing what they're doing. Now, Samuel, listen to their voice. Let them have what they want. But warn them. Warn them. What kind of king they're going to have. Yeah, that's the response. It's a really surprising response if you think about it. And I think what strikes this story is that, you know, Israelites were not rejecting Samuel. They were rejecting God. And the word reject, maas, it means to reject or to despise or abhor. That's different than just rejecting it, right? You know that word abhor is a strong word. Holiness of God abhors evil and sin. That's the word, abhor, ma'as. And the Israelites, the crowd, abhor God. Do you see what's going on? Do you see what's going on? So Lord basically told Samuel to do two things. And this is reiteration. Number one, let them have it. Let them have what they want. Now that sounds a little scary. Scary. Sometimes you ask your parents for something you know you can't ask for. And imagine your parents say, okay, just go ahead and do it. You know something's not right. And God said, let them have it. Obey their voice. Okay? Sounds like what we hear in Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. And secondly, warn them. Okay? Because their choice or what they want, it's not rejection of Samuel, but it's rejection of the Lord. Do you remember in Romans chapter 1 when Paul describes humanity? Again, this is the crowd, this is the mob, this is the humanity. We're all talking about the same thing. When they continue to reject God and suppress the truth, although God has shown that he is eternal power and he exists, but instead of glorifying him, we glorify created things. So if you continue to reject and continue to despise, continue to suppress the truth, then what does God do? And the famous response of Romans chapter 1, verse 24, 26, and 28. Three times, this expression comes up. God gave them over. Let them have it. You do whatever you want to do. Are you listening, people? Imagine an infant baby, and the mother decide to just kind of give the baby up. Just give it over. Can you even imagine that? The baby cries, she doesn't care. Baby poops, he doesn't care. She doesn't care. Baby is sick, he doesn't care. Just kind of give him over. Give it over. Can you imagine that? How much more if God gave you over, you and I over? He doesn't care. He doesn't care. Imagine that, right? God gave them over to their desires. You know why? Because you have rejected me. That's what's happening in John chapter 19, which is in Matthew 27. That's what has happened in 1 Samuel chapter 8 in the Old Testament, in Jesus' time. And perhaps that is what's happening now. Are we different? Is the world different? Right? Perhaps that is what the Lord is doing right now to the Western countries and perhaps even our nation. Just kind of give it over. Let him have it. Let them have it. It's a pretty striking thing. Now we come back to John chapter 19, and I want to describe his suffering. Okay? Now that's a transition. You rejected him, forsaken him. Now what does he do? Okay, we want to take a look at that. First one, then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. I'm going to describe flogging in a moment, and I think it's good to know that. And what else did they do? And the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns. Crown of thorns needs to be twisted together. You know, if you could just picture with me, I told you this story many times. Several years ago, I went to country called Jordan, which is right next to Israel. And I was just walking on a street and just random. And then I step on a thorn. I did. And it was about this big. And it went right through my sneakers. And I wasn't even, you know, stepping on a nail or anything. It was a thorn. I don't know how it came through, but it came right through my sneakers. And somehow they twisted together a crown of thorns. Can you imagine that? Crown of thorns, and then twisted together. Not just scratching, but probably penetrating temple area and frontal area and whatnot. If you could just picture that. And array him in a purple robe. Purple is a royal color. So what are they doing? They are trying to make him look like a king. What kind of king? Just funny king, ridiculous king. They were mocking him. They were making fun of him. You know, I think about this. People try to do all kinds of stuff to laugh. Did you know that? Years ago, I was thinking of this illustration. Years ago, I went to see a horror movie in a movie theater. Do you like horror movies? I don't like it. I went to see a horror movie. I don't remember the title. It might have been Friday the 13th, part 7 or something. I don't know. And I went there. I don't like it, but my friends were going, so I went there. And I couldn't watch. I'm one of those ones, you know, the moment you know someone's limb or head will be chopped off, I couldn't watch it. And I was just, you know, I was doing that. And then something is chopped off. Everyone laughs. Laugh. I was like, everyone was laughing. They were laughing. I was like, this just doesn't fit right. You know, people do crazy things to laugh. And, you know, this is what they're doing to laugh, mocking him. And expression that he arrayed him in the purple robe, and then they came up to him, which means they come to right to their face, right to their face, like right there. His dripping blood with a thorn of crown and the purple robe, and he was already flogged, and they say, "Hail to the king. Hail to the king." What are they doing? Just making fun of him and mocking him. You know, Pilate is trying this to free Jesus. But you know, it's going to fail. So this is the last resort. And basically, so he had him flogged and maltreated, mocked, paraded before the mob. And perhaps he was kind of like seeking for some sort of like pity from the crowd, which they don't have. You know, when the mob sees the blood, they become like a pride of wolves. That's what human beings are, pride of wolves. And they laugh. They laugh, just like when someone's limb is chopped off or head is chopped off in a horror movie. They start laughing. They're laughing. They encourage one another to laugh. Sickening, isn't it? Not only he was appealing for pity, but definitely he was telling the crowd, this man is not dangerous. Don't you see him? He is helpless. He's your king. He's not a dangerous king. Okay. What's the outcome? What's the outcome of Pilate's this futile attempt? A great mistake. Now the control is out of his hand. Mob just took over. They are underestimated. Evil. Of the evil leaders and the fickleness of the crowd. It was completely out of his hand. Crucify him, crucify him. I want to explain flogging, okay? I know you may have seen this picture or you heard about this, but I want to show you flogging. Could you show this just once and then, so that later on people could see it? Mm-hmm. Do you see that? That's Roman flogging view. Roman scourging or flogging is a Roman very brutal way of punishing their criminals. Basically, the victim was often tied to a post, as you see it, with his back exposed. You know, like back exposed and he's tied to a post. If you see the movie Passion of the Christ, you could see that picture pretty graphically. Okay? Then they lash the back with a stick with a leather strap thongs. And you see that, right? It's a stick with a leather straps thongs, multiple thongs of some length. And in the end of those leather thongs, they embedded bits of brass and lead, metal. They embed metal at the tip of that thongs. Or bones filed to sharp point. You can picture that. You can see this weapon, right? You see this weapon. So when you are lashed with this whip or the weapon on your back, and this is what happens. The back gets torn, lacerated, or shredded. Like, I couldn't believe what I was reading from this source. You know the paper shredder? Your back gets shredded as those metal pieces bites the skin and the muscles. Okay. To such an extent that even the deep-seated blood vessels, you know, there are blood vessels, veins and even small arteries, they get ruptured. Okay. And muscles get torn. And sometimes even inner organs or bone may be exposed. Yeah. It was such a horrible torture that no Roman citizen, no matter what and how great their crime is, were allowed to be flogged. It's too inhumane. Okay? It was forbidden for the Roman citizens. Can you picture that? So he was flogged, crown of thorns, a purple robe, and he was dragged and paraded, standing in front of the praetorium. You are the crowd, thousands of you. You're hungry for blood. It's early Friday morning, and Pilate comes out. Behold a man. Would you do that? Ecce homo. Ecce homo. Come on, people. Don't put your head down. Look at him. Look at him, please. Do you want him? That's the situation. You know, so much blood was lost. If you know anything about crucifixion, for a healthy male, Jesus was only early 30s. Presumably a healthy person. But he lasted only 6 hours on the cross. As opposed to a healthy male could last a day or even 2 days. That's why because they don't die, they break their legs. Because when you are hung on a cross, and if you break their legs, what happens is, in order for you to breathe in, you need to lift your body up like that, but you can't do that because your legs are broken. That's why they break their legs, which we will talk about it perhaps this Friday, but usually healthy person lasts a day or two and they just leave it there for them to suffer. But Jesus only lasted 6 hours. And perhaps this explains it. And I don't think that's why, but can you imagine the heartache he went through on the cross as he bore the sin of the world? Okay. So why so much suffering and affliction and humiliation? Now, would you stay with me? Somebody asked this question. Why not just, if he had to die for us, why not he just came down on a parachute, right on Calvary, and go to the cross and die? Why such mockery and scourging and beating and humiliation? Why? Why? And I'm going to try to give you three answers. Okay, why? Number one, in Isaiah chapter 53, verse 5, it was prophesied hundreds of years ago, 700 years ago. And this is what is written in verse 5. He was pierced for your transgressions. And he was crushed. His body was crushed. His bone was crushed, right? He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement or punishment. He's being punished so that you may have peace. And then the last statement is, because of his wounds or flogging, you are healed. Would you just pause for a second and think about that? He was flogged so that you may be healed. We often think Jesus bore our sin on the cross, and he did. He did. But he already bore our sin as he goes through this time of mockery, beating, scourging, and he's already doing that. Can you picture with me one more time? Okay. Picture with me. His muscles were torn. Some of you are muscular, right? You're so excited about your muscles, right? His muscles were torn. His skin was ripped. Blood vessels were ruptured. And just blood all over the place and bleeding profusely. And his pain, he tries to endure, yet it is not going away. In fact, it is getting intensified. It's getting worse to the point of going insane. Have you ever been there? And you're so painful. You're about to go insane. And it feels like time has stopped. The hour of suffering. Why such suffering? Because by his punishment you have peace. Because by his flogging you may be healed. Do you need healing? Ecce homo. Ecce homo. Behold a man. Second reason, perhaps, why so much affliction, humiliation, suffering, it's because he suffers so greatly because men, you and I, are not just sinners, but we are vile sinners. We are wretched sinners. I appreciate that word, vile sinners. We're not just little bit sinners, we are vile sinners, wretched sinners. And the picture of that is in Romans. Let me draw the picture for you, okay? From the Romans chapter 3. Well, Paul describes humanity. That's you, that's me, that's the crowd, that's the mob, that's the Israelites in 1 Samuel 8, that's the Israelite and the crowd and the mob in front of the praetorium, and that's the humanity now. And this is the picture. Romans chapter 3. No one is good, not even one. This is God's assessment, which includes you and I then, right? No one is good, not even one. So whole humanity. And their throat is an open grave. Your throat, my throat is like an open grave. They use their tongues to deceive. Their mouth is full of curses and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. In their path are ruin and misery. And there is no fear of God before their eyes. I was reading Romans chapter 3 and thought, wow, that sounds like John chapter 19 that we are looking at. That Friday morning, that crowd, that mob. That sounds like them. Their throat is like an open grave. They are swift to see blood. And there is no fear of God whatsoever. You know what that means? You are standing there. I was standing there. Before the praetorium. Do you want him? Do you want him as your king? Thirdly, I think perhaps this, I think it is the most convincing reason, perhaps. Third reason why so much of affliction, humiliation, and suffering is because Luke chapter 22, verse 53, Jesus was arguing with the Jews and basically said, this is your hour, the hour of the power of darkness. Satan just kind of took over. And Satan just doing everything possible, thinking that he's winning, right? But that's the hour that God has planned from the beginning. In fact, from the eternity past, isn't it? Genesis chapter 3:15, the first prophecy of Messiah. The serpent will bruise the heel of his the woman's seed. That's Messiah Jesus. This was the plan of God. God has planned this. God has allowed this to happen. You know why? Because our God is a suffering servant God. Our God is suffering servant king. Is he all of a sudden like that? No. Remember? God was always like Jesus. Yahweh is suffering servant king. I want to just summarize. And don't lose me now, please. Stay alert. So what did Pilate do? Pilate brought him out to the crowd. Right? Verse 5. Jesus came out wearing the crown, wearing the robe. He was flogged. And standing next to him and telling the crowd, "Behold a man! Eke! Homo! Look at him! Do you want him? Is that your king? Do you want him? Look at this man. Do you see? You say he's dangerous? Look at him. He's helpless. He's powerless. He's harmless. He can't even handle himself. Eke, homo. Come on, crowd. Do you want him? Do you want him as your king? Or are you going to reject him?" The response of the crowd or the world or humanity was the same, whether it was in 1 Samuel chapter 8 or in the Gospels or now. We want Barabbas. And then Pilate asked, "Then what do I do with Jesus? What do we do with Jesus?" And they said, "Kill him. Crucify him. Away with him. We want another king." Do you see that? We want a king, but not him. We all have a king. Friends, what do you want? Whom do you want? Seriously, I'm asking this question. Whom do you want? Eke, homo. Look at him. This morning, and that morning, that Jesus stood there because he wanted you. That's the only reason he's standing there. That's what he longed for. That's what he planned. That's what he longed to be with you. Do you understand that? Ladies and gentlemen, do you understand that? Don't diss this now. He's standing there because of you. He desired to be your king. But he's not a, you know, those brutal kings like Samuel warned the Israelites, but he's a suffering servant king. Yahweh king. Hesed king. Emet, faithful king. Slow to anger king. Can you imagine that? Gracious king. Merciful king. Put all the attributes upon him. Attributes of God upon him. That's what we're learning, isn't it? All the attributes of God, of Yahweh, culminates and highlighted in the person of Jesus Christ. That's who he is. That's the ultimate manifestation of who Yahweh is. Now he's standing there because he wants you. Although you have rejected him. Right. Just want to ask you the first question that I asked in the beginning. Whom do you want? You can't say, "I'm neutral, I'm middle," because there's no such thing. You either make him the king of your life or you're rejecting him. Bottom line, people. Bottom line. And it has nothing to do with how long you've been going to church. Okay. Would you like to give your throne of life to this king who loved me and gave himself for me like this? Would you let him have your future? Would you let him have your plans? Would you let him have your life? Would you go to that praetorium of that Friday morning right now, people? Right now, with me. And Pilate is asking, whom do you want? Would you kneel down before this king, Ecce Homo, who loved me and who gave himself for me, and let him be the king of your life? Let's pray.